Granny D. I'm talking from KBOO, Portland. I come from Dublin, New Hampshire, and I go across the country working for public funding at the state level. And I often hear about KBOO on my email. It is often mentioned as one of the most progressive and daring stations that we have in this country. They are not afraid to tell you the truth. So tune in to KBOO Portland and get the real word.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Stuck in a slump? Sometimes you gotta shake it out. There's a time for everything. And right now, it's time to dance. Join us for the Digital Rhythm Revolution. Every fifth Sunday from 7 to 8 p.m., we provide dance classics, new bops, dub, breakbeats, oddities, the electronica spectrum, from hardcore to downtempo. Join us for the Digital Rhythm Revolution on 90.7 FM KBOO, Portland. Or join us online or stream anytime at kboo.fm.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilliland.
Thank you so much for joining us. We would first just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. Be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And before we get started, I want to let you all know that KBOO has been on the air for 55 years, making us one of the oldest community radio stations in the country and one of the longest standing media institutions in Portland. And we've been able to remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community because of support from amazing people like you. And now more than ever, we turn to our community to keep the mission alive and help us supplement the loss of federal funding due to Congress's decision to cut grants for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So if you can, please help us continue to serve this wonderful community by donating today. You can just go to kboo.fm/give. We here at Labor Radio thank you so much for your support. So today, you know, anyone who's been paying attention to the news sees that, you know, the Trump regime talks a big game about being pro-worker and pro-American. That's like their, you know, one of their big stances they hold. But today we really want to examine how their, you know, increasingly violent and deranged acts of, quote, immigration enforcement are actually harming working people and are having a profoundly negative effect on the American economy as a whole. Many U.S. industries, you know, namely agriculture, construction, hospitality, and things like that, rely heavily on undocumented or immigrant labor. And immigration raids on workplaces and job sites, really, they create a sudden labor supply collapse in critical labor-intensive sectors of our economy. So, you know, actually, according to the American Immigration Council, states with higher concentrations of undocumented construction workers have seen a noticeable drop in employment in that sector since Trump took office. And labor shortages, you know, they lead to slower building, longer project timelines, rising housing costs, and a higher cost for contractors in general. So really, you know, if you are someone who is trying to organize a major construction project, and then you have to deal with the fact that you have workers, you know, you're unsure about your workforce, day to day or week to week is going to throw off the timeline of it. It's going to throw off your budget, and it's going to make overall the project just be less efficient and more expensive. Undocumented construction workers in Tucson report that under increased ICE enforcement, some contractors are cutting pay by 30 to 40% and demanding longer hours. So, you know, employers are really like all too happy to exploit the fear that is the climate of fear that is existing around, you know, workforces that do work, you know, whether they are themselves undocumented immigrants or, you know, they work, their coworkers are.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there's been so many studies done on this, but, you know, even the threat of immigration enforcement can kind of dramatically shift the balance of power between management and the workforce. Like you said, both for documented and undocumented workers, you know, you were touching on some of this stuff, right? But when people are nervous and there's kind of fear built there, they become more hesitant to speak up about issues. So some of them can't even get brought up.
Yeah.
Maybe even if you are in an industry that is regulated or has collectively bargained, right? Like safety violations, overtime, right? People aren't going to come out and talk about illegal overtime practices when they're not sure if the other people on their shift are going to get, you know, deported,
right?
Even if they themselves are U.S. citizens. So, you know, all of these different types of hostile working environments can just be exasperated when you know, this type of climate is created.
I think that's a great point, because, like, why, you know, if you are someone who has just been watching, you know, social media videos or the news or seen it in your community, and you've seen essentially like people who are representatives of the federal government, they are not wearing badges, you know, in the way that they're not wearing recognizable uniforms. They just look like they could be any person off, you know, the street coming to grab people from your community, from your job sites, and they ostensibly represent the federal government. Why would you then trust, if you have an OSHA complaint, why would you think that calling, you know, your OSHA representative and having them come to the job site to inspect an unsafe workplace claim, why would you trust that? Why would you trust that it's actually someone who says that they're there for that purpose and not just that they're going to send ICE with them or send ICE instead of, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, and I think that's why we talk about all the time on the show that, you know, the executive branch so much kind of is seen as like a, you know, something that it's not. And one of the things that it is it helps determine how we execute against all of the laws, how the different agencies are run. Right. And when the president appoints someone to an agency, just because there's written law doesn't mean they're going to execute it that way.
Yeah.
Right. And we talk about all the time. And I think in this case in particular, to your point, like when we're in this type of administration, people from OSHA are probably getting emails about things like DEI, about things like spotting immigration, right? Like this is probably stuff that wasn't on the radar for them previously.
Yeah. And I'm sure too, like, you know, they're overwhelmed by that. They're getting, you know, their inbox is flooded with things that are not actually related to the work that they're attempting to do, you know, that they need to do on the, to keep workplaces safe. And then I don't have necessarily evidence of this, but I would imagine that there are some employers out there that are using the threat of ICE to keep their work forces in line, or to, you know, to make sure that they just generally are not having, they don't have workers who are willing to speak up against them or to push back on things like that. And so it just creates like a chilling effect across the board, because you have, you know, workers who are afraid of speaking out or like rocking the boat or drawing attention to themselves. You have regulators who are already beleaguered because the federal government is just, you know, in things like OSHA or things like the NLRB, like they are just completely tipping the scales against enforcement of labor side things. You know,
I think a better way to put it might just be that in this type of atmosphere and climate, people are more likely to be exploited.
Yes.
Like workers are more likely to be exploited, whether that's knowingly or unknowingly.
Yeah.
Right. Like you might be a manager and you're like, wow, great. If I don't have to spend this money on infrastructure, I'm not gonna.
Yeah.
Right. And that's not even you like going out of your way to because of this situation and because you're kind of, hey, I'm not gonna like, don't ask, don't tell. Like,
Yeah.
When you create that environment, you're gonna, you know, save money for yourself most likely.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. And it's like we're already talking about industries, especially like construction or agriculture, where there is a lot of like gray area there. You know, you are already dealing with situations where workers are likely being told like don't ask, don't tell about things like that, and employers are operating in that sense. And if you create just more gray area there, it leads to a situation where workplaces are less safe and workers are more liable to get hurt or projects be, you know, thrown off the timeline or not completed at all. You know, like another element of this that I think is kind of going under discussed is that this, of course, also has a chilling effect on like labor organizing. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have people who are afraid to stick their head up because of fear of having, you know, ICE come to the workplace or anything like that, you know, being disappeared, why would they then be willing to work to organize a labor union if that might lead directly to them being taken, you know, disappeared from their family?
Yeah. I mean, I have to imagine a lot of undocumented workers don't want to join unions, but I mean, I do think there's a lot of like US citizens who are a part of collectively bargained like industries in which undocumented workers play a large role.
Yeah, like that's the thing is that, you know, it might not be the
and you probably have personal relationships with people, because I think this thing, when you zoom out, it can become so amorphous. But when you have personal relationships with people and you don't want to see people like uprooted, especially, you know, if they're undocumented, but they've lived here for 15 years, you know, this sort of thing. You know, I could totally see that.
Yeah. Similarly, when ICE detains large numbers of farm, you know, meatpacking or processing workers, production drops dramatically, and that like leads to not only the increasing costs of that production, but also it increases costs for consumers. Like on the supermarket end of, you know, of things, if there is a massive ICE raid at a meatpacking plant, and that shuts down production and raises costs for production, that is then going to be transferred onto the consumer at the other end of the chain. And so this is a place where, you may be someone who does not work in one of these industries. You may be someone who, you know, whatever your political leanings are, you might not care about the immigration raids that are happening.
Yeah.
But when you go to the supermarket and, you know, the cut of steak that you're looking for is now double in price or just not there on the shelves at all, you're going to care about that. And that affects you.
Yeah. No, for sure. And, you know, and obviously, you know, this is a more labor focused kind of economic podcast. But yeah. I mean, I think the thing that's nice to call out here, or not nice to call out, but I think feels right to call out, mm-hmm. is that when our active administration is blaming immigrants and these types of people for the problems that people see in society, which, you know, there are legitimate problems, right? Like here in the city of Portland, homelessness and things like that.
Yeah.
When we start blaming people, blaming immigrants for that, it can just cause a lot of, it can create xenophobia, it can create all sorts of things that is generally just, when you look at the data, not accurate, especially for a country that was built as a country of immigrants. and one thing that I did really want to call out is there was a very recent Fox News segment where basically they had someone from the administration come on and basically talk about how, you know, immigrants bringing cows with them is like what is helping cause a lot of like the destabilization in beef price and things like that. Right. And, you know, I think sometimes we can joke about it, but I'm sure lots of people take that and go, oh my God, like, look at this huge problem. These immigrants, right. You know, whereas like, you know, that's not really a lot of our like trade relationships with Argentina and things are causing a lot of this.
Right.
And kind of decisions made about farming in general. And so I think, you know, obviously we're focused on the labor aspect of it, but I think just from a human aspect, it, you know, obviously it can cause issues societally.
Yeah. I mean, like, you cannot divorce the workplace side, the worker side of this from the cultural side of it, like the rhetoric that is mm-hmm. coming out. I mean, everyone probably remembers during the run up to the presidential campaign or the election last year, you know, we had the whole like, they're eating the cats and dogs, just blatant lies that then get pushed enough that people then buy into that, and it creates, you know, fear that is completely divorced from reality and has nothing to do with the actual lived experience of people immigrating to this country. But it then just creates a situation where they're in danger from the people around them, because it's just people are being lied to constantly. I mean, we here in Portland know very well about that. You know, the reality of what is happening down by the ICE facility in South Portland mm-hmm. is night and day different than what is being told to people, even just outside of the city here in Oregon.
Yeah.
But like people across the country, because of the media coverage of it and specifically because of the rhetoric that comes from the Trump regime and the White House, you know, it's just, it's all lies. And that is true whether you're talking about protest movements here or you're talking about, you know, immigrants coming across the border with cows. Changing the cost of our meat prices. It's like you have to combat it across the board.
Yeah, and I think something that people can forget a lot. You know, obviously the majority of our listenership is in Portland, in a city. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that people can forget is also, you know, whether people want to admit it or not, but undocumented workers and labor and just citizens are part of local economies. And I think the further away you get from a city like Portland, the more of an effect they have on that economy. And I think when you pull people out, right, you deport a bunch of people from a local economy, I mean, that has pretty large ranging effects that I think a lot of people living in a city don't feel.
Yeah.
Just because of just, you know, economic factors of, you know, how the commerce functions.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it is, right, not only are undocumented workers labor, but they're also consumers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that can kind of go untalked about.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Like, we definitely, you know, of course, if you are disconnected from these industries, you feel the downstream effect while you're going to purchase things or you're trying to consume stuff. But yeah. Like, yeah, like if you are in a town, I mean, so here's an example. In Southern California, out in Ventura County, like Oxnard, California, and Ventura, California, just massive agricultural farms out there, you know, producing all kinds of produce and fruit and everything. Early on in the Trump administration, there were huge raids, including like Black Hawk helicopters and like, you know, armored personnel carriers driving onto these farms and standoffs with you know, the workforce there and everything. But, you know, you go in there and you arrest people, you pull people off the workplace, you know, that they're also living around those farms. You then diminish the community because, like, Oxnard, California is a community largely people who do work on those farms.
Yeah.
That then disappears your neighbor, you know, like someone who would come into the local grocery store and buy stuff or the, you know, go to the nail salon, whatever it is, like all of those ancillary businesses to the main, you know, the production of the farm work there, those are all hurt as well. And then, you know, you, if you're living on a street and your neighbor gets, you know, disappeared, all of a sudden your community is less safe. You know, your friend is gone. So it is a thing that is across the board. It's not just an economic issue, as you said, but it hits every bit of our American society, and it has a negative impact. And, you know, you can argue, everyone has an opinion about immigration in general, but like it would be hard to argue that the amount that immigration was negatively impacting our country prior to all of this enforcement was worse than what we're seeing right now. Like, then, you know, the impact to our psyche and to our society, and like to pulling at the threads of our society, of having unaccountable, unmarked, you know, bands of thugs just going around and terrorizing citizens, and, you know, people are not, whether or not they're at workplace, but like if you're just on the street and they crash into you and then they pull you out of their car. I mean, there's the video of that woman that the ICE agents crashed into her, and then they tried to, you know, they caught, to come up with a reason why they did that. So they pulled her out of the car at gunpoint. I mean, like that pulls at the social cohesion, and it's more than just an economic problem. It is like a social problem that we're dealing with.
I think too, I guess I hesitate to use a word like I think everybody, but I do think generally, I think most people that you talk to in person, you know, not online discourse, like nobody really wants undocumented or illegal immigration, right? I think that's where this conversation can really get obfuscated of, I think people want to create a system where it feels like, you know, immigration for someone living not in America is attainable.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that work? And how do we do it in like a lawful, processed, like good manner?
Yeah.
Right. And I think sometimes the conversation can become like, oh, you just want like people coming up. You know, I don't think that's really what's actually happening. I think people want opportunity, and we honestly, for economic and just our own livelihood, should want them to want that.
Yeah.
And so how do we, you know, create a system that helps us do that? And it just isn't helpful to kind of say, well, oh, you know, like I said, it just gets obfuscated by, I think, to your point, rhetoric.
Yeah. And like, it does seem pretty clear that, you know, with all of the cuts that have happened to government agencies over the last, you know, since Trump took office, the one place that you saw a massive increase in funding was to the ICE budget. You know, they were approved something like $75 billion budget increase. And so, you know, everyone, you know, regardless of your political opinion, you can have different opinions on immigration, but I think everyone in this country wants to improve the legal immigration process. And if we are then diverting funds away from that process to just the enforcement side, we're not helping the other side. We're not actually putting money towards actually solving the problem that is ostensibly being dealt with through the immigration raids by then building more infrastructure around how to make legal immigration attainable and, efficient in this country.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of times people say things like, oh, you know, they, you know, the quote unquote, they aren't sending their best. But, you know, if you've been in Oxnard, California or somewhere else and you're working these places and you've done nothing wrong, you haven't broken any laws, like, you know, obviously, you know, I personally think there should be some sort of path for you to stay, right?
Yeah.
And so I think to your point, like targeting the folks already here, I think is just not actually solving the core issue.
Right.
You know? Where, you know, whether you agree with me on the, hey, they should have some sort of path.
Yeah.
It doesn't, regardless, it doesn't really solve anything.
And also, like, something that does get lost in it too, I think, is that like the response is so outsized in compared to like the crime, you know, quote unquote crime. Like, being undocumented in this country is not a felony. It is a civil misdemeanor, you know? And then instead of responding to it in kind, you are mounting essentially like urban warfare to indiscriminately root out anyone who might be, you know, without warrant, might be undocumented, quote unquote. Like, that is not a proportional response to the issue as it existed prior to this explosion of like ICE militias on our streets. Like, that is a violent response that you would only expect were we experiencing like true unabashed violence, gang violence on our streets. You would expect this response. But to go into a workplace where someone is actually like, you know, you go in and raid the kitchen of a restaurant where people are working and then serving people food. Like, that is not a dangerous situation. That is not a situation in which it warrants people coming in with, you know, big rifles and you know, busting in doors and bringing helicopters. Like, that is just so disproportionate that it's hard to say that it's there for anything other than to instill fear. Like, it is a terror campaign it's a terror campaign that is then having downstream effects of disrupting our economy at every level. Just going to quickly here take a moment that, you know, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Labor Radio here on listener-supported KBOO Community Radio. We'll get back to our discussion in just a moment, but first I want to drop a quick reminder to please consider donating to KBOO now and help us remain a commercial-free, volunteer-powered resource for this community. Like, now more than ever, we turn to our community to keep the mission alive and help us supplement the loss in federal funding due to Congress's decision to cut grants to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So if you can, donate today at kboo.fm/give or by mailing your donation to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Thank you for supporting Community Powered Radio. And now, you know, we'll get back to our discussion about the ways in which these ICE raids are impacting, you know, workplaces and the economy in general.
Yeah. The other thing that I kind of wanted to make sure that got communicated was, you know, and I think this can surprise some people, but there are lots of undocumented workers who actually do pay federal tax.
Yes.
You know, obviously not all. I'm right. not trying to say that all do. But there is a good chunk of money that comes from that as well, right?
And yeah. So
again, you know, when you pair shifting resources to ICE and you add on the fact that you're basically cutting your taxable kind of population, and then also you're doing tax cuts.
I mean,
this is
for the wealthy.
This is what a deficit makes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yeah, and like, you know, regardless of whether or not the people are paying federal taxes, they are, you know, they're paying sales taxes. They're paying, you know, all the other property tax, whatever else comes with the process of existing and being a consumer in this country. So it is just affecting. It is diminishing our tax base while sending all what is left of our tax revenue to an enforcement wing that is far disproportional to what the problem was to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, you know, doing raids on workplaces or, you know, just having the threat of that happening, it decreases the productivity of workers. You know, it slows down the timeline. I mean, just as a personal anecdote, my friend works construction. And he was talking about how this week, you know, they've been working on a project out in the gorge, and they had to shut down one day. They just did not go out to the job site because there was rumors of ICE, you know, vans being driving around the town that they were in, and they didn't want to risk that. And then, you know, when they did go back to work, they were basically had to assign a few members of the team to just be kind of constantly watching the driveway to make sure that there weren't people, you know, there wasn't a caravan of ICE vehicles driving up to raid the workplace. So that means that you had to take multiple people away from the tasks that they were supposed to be doing to get the job done to stand guard. And so that just reduces, like, not only does that create a climate of fear and uncertainty at the workplace, but it also just reduces the crew's ability to get work done in a timely manner. And, you know, that then affects the client and everything else. So, like, it is a holistic slowdown of economic processes in this country that is a result of this. So yeah, we're definitely coming up against the end of it here, but just to quickly kind of close us out, you know, as we've been laying out, like, immigrants do real and necessary work in many essential sectors of our society and our economy. You know, when ICE enforcement disrupts their labor, it's not just their livelihoods at risk, but it's also the sustainability of industries in general. And, you know, these are industries that all U.S. workers depend on. You know, by aggressively removing a large portion of the labor force, this, you know, the Trump regime has essentially undermines both business growth and the ability of all workers to demand fair wages and, you know, safe working conditions. It also, you know, enforcement-driven climate of fear weakens the collective bargaining that makes worker protections more fragile. You know, it also allows employers to feel a little more emboldened to underpay or overwork or cut corners, you know, underpay their workers, overwork their workers, and cut corners, you know, specifically around things like safety. And, you know, while the government continues to spend heavily on enforcement, it neglects investment in social infrastructure, like, as we mentioned, creating a path for legal immigration, or, as we've seen with the NLRB, like, strengthening labor protections. So they are neglecting those things in favor of just doing a terror campaign of, you know, immigration enforcement. And all of that, you know, all of those investments that are being cut could instead stabilize and help grow the economy in a more equitable way for everyone in this, all working Americans. But that's just not what we're seeing, unfortunately. So yeah, we are out of time here, but obviously this is an ongoing issue and we will continue to keep, you know, keep our eyes on it and bring it back as it needs to be. So
yeah. And yeah, other folks on the network, we'll probably cover this, but just want to kind of give a shout out and solidarity to the Starbucks Workers United groups who are going on strike right now. You know, stay tuned to Labor Radio and you can hear more about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Stand in solidarity. Don't buy Starbucks. But we are out of time. So thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper.